Hello, welcome to Spotlight, beaming at the joy of art.
Spotlight, brought to you by the Isle of Man Arts Council.
This evening, we hear about a very special anniversary for an art group in the north of the island. Eat Your Words, a wonderful, unique new book detailing the history of the food we've eaten on the Isle of Man over the years. And a last chance for now to apply for funding for a project for the Year of the Manx Language. Remember, do get in touch with any creative artistic endeavours you might be involved in planning, hoping to create or would really like to, you know it, put in the spotlight. Poetic, theatrical, musical, literary, sculpture, ceramics, drag, film, mime, media, social media, digital, yes, they're all there. Drop me a line, howardcaine@manxradio.com, C-A-I-N-E, or spotlight@manxradio.com. Be delighted to hear from you. And let's see if we can get you on the air. Why not? That's what we're here for. Now, the Isle of Man is blessed, of course, to have a rich artistic heritage in so many ways. Music and singing naturally, Manx language, literature, poetry, and of course the visual arts. There are numerous wonderful art groups around the Isle of Man, some large, some small, all points in between. What they all share is a love of visual arts and a desire to welcome people into the joy of painting or drawing or ceramics or the like in a relaxed and friendly atmosphere. Whether an experienced artist who might have let the hobby lapse for some time, or perhaps a complete novice, keen to learn. The Man in Art group in Ramsey have been doing just this for, well, quite a few years, it turns out, as this year sees them celebrate their 75th anniversary. To find out more, I headed up north for a catch-up and a great cup of coffee with two active members and busy committee members, Vice Chair and Secretary A.D. Weir and Publicity Officer Wendy Turner. And I started by saying congratulations on their 75th anniversary.
So Sidney Wadsworth started the group and he invited some of his friends to come and paint at his house, which is on the Sulby River. His wife was an artist as well, but unfortunately we don't know her name, only Mrs. Wadsworth.
That'll do.
And it's just gone on from there. The first exhibition was in Albert Road School in Ramsey. They used the halls and the classes for it. And that run for a few years. And then they moved into St. Paul's Hall. And we've been there ever since.
And what about membership? Is it just people around Ramsey or around from the whole island?
No. I think we get different people from different places. Most of the people are from Ramsey. But when it comes to the exhibition, we get them from all Ireland.
And how long have you been involved?
4 years, nearly 5 years.
Oh, gosh, so a relative newbie then.
Yeah, a newbie. Yeah.
And what drew you into art?
My husband. He retired and my daughter and I persuaded him to take up art because he wasn't doing anything really.
Getting under your feet, you mean?
Yeah. And we had a friend who was in the art group and he said, why don't you come along? And my husband is actually quite shy. And I said, well, come on then, we'll go and have a look. So we went to have a look and I said to him, what do you think? Go and have a go. So he said, yeah, if you'll come along with me. Now, I am a crafter, or a card crafter. I make cards. So I went along and Kevin took his paints and things and I took my card stuff and was encouraged to have a go at something different. So I ended up doing colouring with pencils and it's just gone on from there. I would have got that much encouragement, as well as Kevin. Mm-hmm. Now I paint.
And do you get a mixture of within the group on all sort of different types of art? Do you have some people doing sort of sculpture and some working in oils and such like?
Yeah, all mediums. We work in all mediums. We definitely have a chap who comes, he's very good at sculpting, isn't he?
Now then, we've just been having a lovely look through the Man and Art Group sort of folder, a beautiful folder which is going to be on display. There is this lovely exhibition coming up to celebrate the 75th. That starts on the 24th?
That's correct, yeah. 24th, and it runs through to the 2nd of August, I believe.
And when will that be?
Where will it be? In St. Paul's Hall, in Market Square, in Ramsey.
Marvellous. And this is going to be open to all?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Anybody can come up. It's only a pound entry. Come up and have a look at all the lovely art that everybody does.
And this marvellous, we've just been having a look before we started recording here, with this brilliant big folder, and this is put together, and it's like it's an A3 size, is it? Sort of an A3 size folder with all the details, detailing the whole history of the of the society, going back to the opening, pretty much the opening meeting.
Yeah, absolutely. Kevin Adie have done a fantastic job finding out all the bits and bobs, been at the museum. We also had the original 1950s minutes book, which was found in the bottom of the box in the garage, would you believe? So they've resurrected that, and they've done a fantastic job putting this album together, and we hope everybody's going to enjoy it.
Now then, again, with there's all sorts of different types, of, we were saying, lots of different artists within the group. Is that going to be displayed within the exhibition? Is it, again, that we've got a nice mix of different types of media?
Yeah, predominantly it will be paintings. We usually get one of our members, Chris, is fantastic at wood sculptor, and he quite often puts in some of his wooden panels, which are absolutely fabulous. There are artists who do things in ceramics and clay and so on, but they don't generally enter them, which is a shame, really, because it would be nice to see some other types there, but it is predominantly paintings.
We also have, so running in conjunction with this, the Ramsey Art Trail. Tell us a bit more about that.
Yeah, this came about. We were looking for something to sort of celebrate the 75th year, something extra on top of our exhibition. And I'm afraid I sort of helped run the Facebook page for our group. Got into conversations on the Ramsey Community Pinboard page. And it sort of came on the back of that, conversations that were going on with non-members, just people in Ramsey. And I sort of thought, well, hey, you know, actually having an art trail this year would be quite good. Now, there's something special about this art trail. It's going to run from the 18th of July to the 22nd of August. So it's running for 5 weeks of the school summer holidays. So the idea, obviously, is for families bring their children. It's free, so they can spend an hour or so wandering around the street in Ramsey. It's going to be 20 A4 size works of art done by our members, placed in shop windows, and each one will be numbered. The idea is that children will come along, pick up the leaflet and make note of which numbers where, pop their name and details on, and there's a prize draw when it's all finished. But the rather unique and special thing about this is that all these paintings are known masterpieces. They will be recognised. There are versions, of course, so they're not necessarily going to be the standards of, you know,
be masterpieces all the same.
Well, I don't think we could give Rembrandt a run for his money, but we've tried. But each painting is rather special because it's going to feature Thomas the Ramsey Town Cat.
So I hadn't heard of Thomas the Ramsey Town Cat.
Oh no, Thomas is very special. He was actually awarded the Freedom of Ramsey a few months back now at an official ceremony at the Town Hall.
Wow. And he just sort of wanders through the streets of Ramsey, doesn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. He can be seen regularly in Ramsey. He walks in and out of all the shops. He sits in the shop windows. I think just about everybody feeds him. Everybody pets him. He's a very sociable cat. Spends a lot of time in the Allemand Farmers.
He's not soft.
No, I think actually that he helps them out, if you get my drift. But he does actually have an owner, Suzanne, and she was lovely, and she came to see all our artwork. Was it last week or the week before? I think it was. And she saw all the paintings and has given us her full seal of approval.
Wonderful. So each of these pictures, like you say, so they're sort of variants on masterpieces. So the girl with the pearl earring and... Mm-hmm. Others people, I mean, some of the, I think there was some Rembrandt there, I think it's some Van Gogh as well,
absolutely.
And they all feature the cat.
They all, every single one features the cat. Some of them you'll have to look a little harder than others. There's one, for instance, that's quite like a Where's Wally painting, but it's actually after a Lowry, and that hopefully will be quite fun for children to try and find Thomas in.
Terrific. So they can pick up, where can they pick up the actual leaflet to do these?
The leaflets will actually be available in all the participating shops, but also the town library as well.
Just for children or can big kids join in?
Everybody can join in, but the prize draw is for 14s and under.
Now, it's a wonderful celebration, really, of 75 years. The people listening to this maybe might want to get involved. I mean, can anyone come along if they want to get involved with the Man and Art Group?
Yes, anyone at all. We meet on a Monday morning between 10 and 1, and if anybody wants to drop in, the kettle's always on. There are biscuits as well.
Oh, come on, what's not to like?
And Wendy is like our welcomer, and she will take everybody around that comes in and shows them what we're all doing, and we each talk to them, and they can just join in. It's great.
And do they need to have any previous artistic experience or skill, or can they come along as a rank novice?
Yeah, a rank novice. I had no skill, and I paint now, so anybody can come along.
Wow. What about you, Wendy? Did you get in the same sort of way? How did you get involved?
Well, I basically by moving to Ramsey. We'd always lived in Douglas, born and brought up in Douglas. And in 22, I think it was, we moved up just north of Ramsey. And during lockdown, like a lot of people, I picked up a paintbrush and had a play. And when I was moving up here, I'd actually attended one of their Meet the Artist events at the Fanoddery Brewery. And met a couple of the girls there who've now become really good friends, and they encouraged me to come along and see what they were all about, and I came along, and the rest is history. Love it. It's such a lovely bunch of people.
Have you got a specialist media or?
Mainly sort of watercolour or acrylics. Yeah, play with those. But one day I want to try oils, but you know, I've spent enough money on watercolour and acrylics at the moment, so I don't think I can buy oils just yet.
Well, listen, many congratulations. It's a wonderful celebration. It's going to be a great exhibition, I know, and the art trail, I've just seen pictures of some of the mini masterpieces which will be dotted around Ramsey Town, featuring Thomas in various guises. They're terrific, some of those. I must go and have a take a look at them. You were saying you do the Facebook page. Obviously, if people want to see online, where's the best place to go?
Well, the Facebook page, and it's just Manin Art Group. Simple as that.
Congratulations again to them. They really are a very friendly bunch. And if you've ever fancied having a go at art but have been too afraid to try, this could be the place for you, especially if you live in the north, as it's rather handy. The exhibition, again, is at St Paul's Hall in Market Square between the 24th of July and the 2nd of August. So plenty of time to get along and have a look and check out the trail as well.
Spotlight, brought to you by the Isle of Man Arts Council.
If you're a keen cook like me, you've probably amassed a fair number of food or recipe books. I know a lot of people just use the web now, but it's not really the same or as intimate as using Delia or Nigella. Particularly Nigella. Anyway, I digress. As you'll probably be fascinated by a new book just published here on the island by author Sue King, detailing what's been on the plates of eaters on the Isle of Man over the last 200 years. Eaters, diners, food, especially I'm talking about in the eating establishments which have graced these shores over the decades. Sue dropped into the Spotlight studio. I put it to her, this must be the first such title to explore this wonderful subject in such detail.
I think it is, Howard, because I know Manx people are very familiar with the foods that we've eaten in the home over the years. So we're all used to the idea that we have a background of Bonnag and Manx broth and spud and herring and all those familiar traditional favourites. But I started looking into some old menus that my father had collected and from the 1980s, and realised that there were dishes in there that I'd never heard of, and it just sort of got me thinking. And so I started looking into menus that family had, and then I went to the museum and discovered their wonderful collection at Manx National Heritage. They have a fabulous collection of old menus there. And it just sort of blew me away that there was this sort of whole wealth of foods that Manx people used to eat in the past that I just wasn't aware of. So I thought, I've got to research this. This is fascinating.
And you come from a foodie background yourself?
No, I wouldn't say so. Well, my dad was a hotelier, and he did train as a chef many, many years ago. So he was very passionate about cooking. But I think the love of food just comes from Keith Floyd for me. That's, you know,
wonderful. Well, that's a good way to go.
Yeah.
Always so had a glass in his hand.
Yeah, so I've always loved cooking myself, and I've always sort of followed the television chefs. You know, MasterChef is my go-to program. So I've learned a lot from them, and but no, I don't have any training in it. I'm just interested in what other people do.
So what do you think, looking back then, because again, it's a subject that's always fascinated me, what would you say has been the sort of the biggest change over the years of the food that people now go out to eat, particularly, as you say, if you're going to hotels, if you're on holiday, you go to restaurants? How would you describe the changes over the last several decades?
Well, I think the standard now on the Isle of Man is absolutely extraordinary. You know, we've had the Manx menu competition for the past couple of years at least, which has shown that our hospitality people are doing an amazing job as far as standards go. But I feel that's only been in the past maybe couple of decades before, you know, I was researching up to the year 2000, so my research basically started 1800 to 2000, so covering a couple of centuries. Going back to the Victorian era, the Manx restaurant scene was quite extraordinary. It was much more adventurous than I ever imagined. So came across some really fascinating menus and a very, very strong French influence. So the French influence came into the Isle of Man probably in the early 1800s. We had our first proper restaurant in about the 1830s here in Douglas. I don't mean a French restaurant, but a French, as in French style, so they were cooking in the continental style and serving in the continental style, which was quite something new. And then right through the Victorian era, the standard got better and better. But then as we enter the 20th century, it sort of tailed off again. So we had the wartime and we had a lot of backtracking on adventurousness in food. So by the time you get to the 1950s, it's become very plain again. It's like a boarding house rice pudding and stews and hot pots. And it wasn't until the 1980s when it began to creep up again, and then the foreign influences came in, and we had the Chinese restaurants arrived on the island, we had Italian restaurants, Indian restaurants. They all turned up in the around the sort of 1960s to 1980s. And from then on, it began to sort of come up again.
And I think, do you think food has sort of got lighter? Because on the one hand, if you look at a lot of particularly sort of fast food now, you think an awful lot of everything being deep fried, whether it's chips or whether it's, you know, having burgers or, you know, nuggets, whatever the case may be. But generally, it's sort of lighter. I always think when you look at particularly a lot of Victorian menus, they seem really heavy and a lot of it.
They might seem that way, but the way that they actually prepared the food and served it, they served it in courses. So even though you might have an 8-course dinner, they put a lot of thought into having a heavy course followed by a light course, and they would have vegetables followed by meat. So it was all sort of broken up, and even they would have a sweet, which they considered to be like a light jelly or a custard, and then they would follow it with a pudding, which was much heavier, so it was made of bread or pastry, and then they followed it with what they called dessert, which was fresh fruit. So in the summertime, you had lots of fresh raspberries, strawberries, peaches, melons, whatever. And then in the winter, they would serve dried fruit. So you would have apricots and dates and nuts. So the way that they ate was, it was quite sensible, really.
And then interesting things, just looking about, as you quote in one of the places, if you wonder whether Manx people really did eat turtle soup, the answer is yes. Now, everyone's heard of turtle soup. You wouldn't necessarily think turtle soup would be on a Manx menu.
No, you wouldn't. And, it's quite a divisive dish for obvious reasons, because, you know, turtles we think of now as cute creatures, and of course they're under threat from overfishing and they're endangered. Yes, so they are protected species, but in the 1830s, which is when they were first brought to the Isle of Man, they actually came from the Caribbean, so they imported live Caribbean green turtles, and they processed them here in Douglas, and then they produced this creation called turtle soup. From everything that I've learned, it doesn't sound terribly appetizing, and there was a lot of snob value to it. So it was incredibly expensive, as you can imagine. So it had this idea that you prepared the soup in Douglas, or you could send out the turtle around the island to all of the gentry who are living in the big estates around the island, and their cooks would process it themselves into turtle soup. But they also served with it a very, very strong alcoholic drink called turtle punch, which was basically a rum, Caribbean rum, mixed with lime juice and other various wonders. And you had to drink that to counter the taste of the soup.
Yeah. I don't know whether I'm tempted or not.
Am I selling it?
Yeah. I don't know if I'll go for that one. But it's interesting, isn't it, how, again, that link between, as you say, foodstuffs and a snob value of, and even now, I suppose, you might think of rather controversial dishes that still exist today, like, I don't know, shark's fin soup or bird's nest soup or things like that. Very, very controversial and divisive, as they're, you know, using as you say, creatures which might be endangered, but still have a high value amongst those who... It's almost the case of being able to eat it rather than the actual dish itself sometimes, isn't it?
Yes. And then, of course, there was the mock turtle soup, which came later, because once turtles became endangered and they couldn't eat the real thing, there was this taste for... The texture of turtle soup, because to our taste it's very gelatinous, but in the Victorian era they enjoy gelatinous flavours, which is something that we find quite hard to sort of counter. But mock turtle soup was made of calf's head, and I don't know which is worse, to be honest.
None of them sound good, do they?
No. So, but
what,
yeah.
What about, I'm intrigued with hydropathic pudding.
Oh, one of my favourites. But in fact, Howard, you have probably eaten hydropathic pudding without knowing it, because nowadays we know it as summer pudding.
Oh, it's a favourite of mine, yeah.
It's delicious, particularly this time of year when you can get the fresh fruits like, you know, raspberries and strawberries and currants, red currants. But in the Victorian times, they believed, sort of around the 1880s, 1890s, they had this firm belief that water was very, very good for you, whether you bathed in it, whether you drank it, whether you ate foods that were made of water. So hydropathic pudding was basically fruit, which is very, very juicy, and they would soak bread in it and then put it in a basin and let all the juices from the fruit soak into the bread, and then afterwards you would sort of let it go cold and you'd eat it with custard or cream. And they would serve it at the Hydro Hotels, one of which was the Hydro Hotel in Ramsey, which is then, of course, became the Grand Island Hotel. But they would serve that as an alternative to pastry, because they believed that pastry, with being heavy, was not good for you, whereas a pudding that was made of bread and fruit was much more conducive to good health.
So are there menus in the book? Are people able to try? Again, I'm not suggesting people try turtle soup. I think we can probably brush over that one now in modern times. But other recipes of menus past that people could try?
Oh, definitely, yes. And there's a lot of recipes in there. Some recipes have come from very sort of substantiated sources, so they've come from the chefs who created the menus. So I would definitely recommend trying some of those. There are other recipes that are from Victorian publications or from Victorian newspapers. I would say take them with a pinch of salt, really, because in the old days, they didn't always put in the right quantities. In fact, sometimes they wouldn't put quantities in at all in a recipe. So they'd just say a handful of this, a cupful of that, mix it all together, and there you go, and bung it in the oven. So the idea is that the recipes are included for historical interest. But some of them, yes, I would say are definitely worth trying. In fact, there's one or two that I had to try because I was so sort of curious to know what they actually looked like. And one of them was... from the vegetarian restaurants, which, believe it or not, started up in the 1880s on the Isle of Man.
And that's amazing, isn't it? Yes, you think of them being a modern invention, but...
Yeah. Yes, but, yeah, the vegetarian movement was just sort of taking off around the UK in that time. It didn't really take off in the Isle of Man. You know, they tried for a few years and then it died out, and it wasn't until the sort of late 20th century when it sort of first took off again. But there was a dish called Eggs of the Rising Sun, and it took me an awful lot of digging to try and find out what this recipe was. And it turns out, and unfortunately it's another one that I say it's not exactly appetizing, but it's hard-boiled eggs with sliced cooked carrots in a white sauce, which is also made with boiled onions. And the idea is that you arrange the carrots and the yolk of the egg to look like the rays of the sun. So it might look pretty, but I don't know if it would taste all that good. But yeah. I had to make it to at home just to work out what it was.
It looks absolutely terrific. So where can people get it? I see the support from Culture of Annan bring the book out.
Yes. Oh, the support from Culture of Annan was invaluable. As I said in the acknowledgements, I wouldn't have made it past the hors d'oeuvres without them, because it helped me turn what was just the germ of an idea into something that, you know, I could actually really sort of work on and make a reality. So thanks to them. And yes, the book is available for sale from Manx National Heritage shops in Douglas and the House of Mananin. From the Bridge Bookshop in Ramsey and Port Erin, and from Mostly Manx in Douglas, just behind Marks and Sparks.
It's terrific. And if there's one recipe you think people should try, would it be the spud and herring, or is there something else that you think people, you know, if you're only going to try one thing, just give that a whiz and see what you think. Would it be the spud and herring? Perhaps it would be the spud and herring, I don't know.
No, actually, Howard, I would say sea pie.
Oh.
Yes.
That's a good name. I like it. Sea pie. Sounds good. Is that a variant on fish pie?
Well, it's not actually. No, it's actually a beef steak pie.
Wow.
Yes, yes. But I'm not going to give anything else away because you just have to read the book to find out.
It really is a great read, beautifully illustrated. I will certainly be getting a copy to peruse at my leisure. Probably not over dinner, though. I'll drop something on the pages. Just time to tell you about Thresht. Regular listeners will have heard Culture Vannon's Ruth Kegan Gell talking about the Year of the Manx Language 2026, and an integral part of that is Thresht Initiative. It's aiming to help encourage and fund various exciting Manx projects. Ruth explained more to me, including just what is Thresht.
So Thresht is a Culture Vannon initiative, and it means a few different things as a word. It means trust, confidence or hope in Manx. And we first ran this scheme during lockdown, but it's back and it's bigger and bolder than ever. And what we're going to do is basically help spark a wave of creative energy by offering up to 30 project grants of £500 per project to help bring the Manx language to life in new exciting ways ahead of the Year of the Manx Language in 2026. So these are open now to apply to.
Fantastic. Give us a flavour of them, the sort of things we're talking about.
Well, there's lots of different themes. So we've got five themes for the Year of the Manx Language, and the projects are based around these. So the themes are young people and families, identity and sense of place, community and creativity, research and resources, and lifelong learning. So some of them are where you could actually have quite entry-level Manx through to fluent speakers. So it might be things like we can provide lists of words to help people, but designing some stickers with positive Manx on them, or running a short course for absolute beginners in Manx, creative writing, poetry or short stories in Manx, creating songs in Manx, or maybe coming up with a learning resource. Also things like beach art as well, taking positive words and making beach art, filming it or photographing it. And there's so many ideas. I mean, they're just off the top of my head, but we've got about 30 different projects. So it's definitely worth having a look at that. If you are somebody who's a creative spark, who is passionate about Manx, you don't have to have that much Manx. You can have a little bit, right through to fluent speakers, as I say. But if you want to get involved and make a difference in a tangible way, this is your way to do it.
And you said you don't have to be a fluent speaker. If someone's looking at it, obviously it's going to involve Manx. Our projects, if they're doing, you know, poetry or storytelling or something like that, has it got to be all in Manx, or can it be a sort of a mix of Manx or English, or how does that work?
Well, for example, there are podcasts. So you could actually do a podcast about Manx, or there's a short film which is about Manx speakers. So that could be created totally through, not totally through English, but in English, and then have bits of Manx throughout it, or, you know, and do things like that. So the actual delivery language could be English. Because what we also want to do is, one of the themes of the year is to help advocate for, not theme, the aim of the year is to advocate for the Manx language. And so we want to be able to get people who are completely fresh to Manx. You know, we want to get them involved and realise that there's lots of different ways into the language. So the best thing to do is have a look, I would say, at all the projects, which you can find on culturevannon.im, and you can go to the news section and they're all in there. You just need to click through to the PDF, which gives you the full outline, and you can really find out what would suit you then as well. But we support as well. So if you are an entry-level Manx speaker, you know, or you're brand new to it, but you have a, you know, this idea, we want to do one of the creative projects, we can help with terminology and language and things as well. So the development officers, myself, James Franklin and Chloe Woolley, are behind these projects and will be able to support you in that.
And will the projects, you know, as you say, whether it's beach art or a song or some sort of, yeah, as you say, digital media, will they sort of be highlighted or showcased or whatever during the year?
Yes, we would like to do that. So some of these will be actually delivered towards the end of this year, so they're ready for 2026. And some of them would be things like events. So, for example, there are things like one for going into nurseries and helping do sort of sessions which have Manx language and song throughout them for nursery students. Maybe that would be something that would happen in 2026 as part of the year of. So some of the events and things would happen in 2026, and then other projects could be delivered before that. So the idea is to have lots of things to celebrate, but we would certainly showcase these, absolutely. You know, it's a wonderful thing, and certainly when it happened in 2020 in lockdown, we got some lovely projects, and that was across Manx culture. These have obviously got a focus on the language, but the Trace projects originally meant we had things like tutorials online and beautiful pieces of art that was created and all sorts of stuff. It was a really, really valuable thing. And it also helps give the community empowerment and gives them creative outlet with these defined projects.
Is there a specific cutoff date?
There is. So for the first round of applications, we've got Friday the 25th of July. So it's definitely good to go and have a look at it now, but you still have basically a month from a month to have a go and put together your application. So it's not a long, arduous application. There's an application form, but really it's finding about what your ideas and how you think you would be good to deliver it, basically.
So you just have time to get in that first round of applications if you are very fast. And I do mean very fast. Don't hang around. See you next week. Be good, whatever you're doing. Be creative about it. Hemo.